Welcome to this new nutrition business podcast. My name is Julian Melantin. And this week, I'm going to talk about how the media responds to and reports scientific studies. On Thursday, 19th of October, the T.H. Chan School of Public Health at Harvard University put out a press release. And the press release was headlined, quote, "Red meat consumption associated with increased type 2 diabetes risk." Now, that's a headline that's probably going to sound scary to most people. I have a copy of that press release right here on my desk. It's about a study published on the same day in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And it's a study undertaken at the Chan School of Public Health at Harvard University. The focus of the study and the conclusion promoted in the press release is that it's a bad idea to eat red meat more than a couple of times a week, as your risk of diabetes allegedly increases, although the press release doesn't actually say by how much it increases, whether it's a small or a large increase. So I'll make a few comments about the study itself, but I'll do that later. My focus in this talk really is how the media responded, because as you may already have guessed by the title of this podcast, it's becoming increasingly clear that you can no longer trust the mainstream media as a credible source of information about food, nutrition, and health. I should begin by saying that the Harvard study was brought to my attention by an Irish farmer who follows me on Twitter. So I'd like to say a big thank you to Huey the Hill Farmer, who farms in the County Antrim Hills of Northern Ireland. He drew my attention to a report on the Harvard study by his local media outlet called the Belfast Telegraph. Prompted by Huey the Hill Farmer's message and the Belfast Telegraph article, I went to the Harvard University website, and that's where I found the original press release. At this point, about 3 or 4 hours had passed since the press release had been posted by Harvard. With the help of one of my colleagues and a little Googling, it was possible to see that in just those 4 hours, hundreds of media sources had covered the story. And I mean hundreds. Forbes, CNBC, MSN, The New York Post, The Guardian, The New York Times, CNN, Sky News, Euronews, The Boston Herald, ABC News, NPR. I won't go on, but that just gives you a flavor. And what was really striking about all of the media stories in all of those outlets was that they were all a straight reproduction of the press release. Some of them had slightly moved the sentences around. Some had slightly changed the order of the words. But basically, the articles were all pretty much the same. And we could see that, my colleague and I, just by comparing them to the original press release, was that all the media reports were essentially a press release. The similarity of all the stories to the press release, the fact that all of these stories appeared within 3 or 4 hours of it coming out, basically tells you that none of the journalists had gone and read the actual study that the release was about. None of the reports contained any information from inside the study, only what appeared in the press release. Quotes from the scientists who'd undertaken the study, yep, the ones in the media reports were exactly the ones in the press release. Nor had any of the journalists found anyone in the world of nutrition research who might have an independent view about what the study said. And what was interesting was that the byline that appeared above the article was often someone described as being science editor or health editor. But even the science editors and the health editors had simply reproduced the press release. Now, in our experience, provided you have someone on your team who knows how to read a scientific study, and frankly, that's not all that difficult, and you know a little bit about nutrition science, you can go and download a study like that. In the space of a couple of hours, you can pick out all the key points. And then, if you know something about the field, you can contact nutrition researchers and you can get some kind of commentary. And that is something in our business, which we do fairly frequently. So you're looking at maybe 3 hours' work. So for someone whose job title was science editor or health editor, well, they should have been able to do that. And it might have been a very short amount of time to pull it together. But clearly, none of the ones we looked at had bothered to do any of that. The fact is, the mainstream media now exists largely to reproduce press releases just like this one. And in fact, this has come as no surprise to us. We actually receive hundreds of press releases every year from universities about published studies. And we receive them because it's part of our business to keep up with the stream of new science and make sure we understand it. And we're able to see, as we've noticed more and more over the years, that every story you see in the mainstream media about nutrition and health is basically a press release from a university. Now, four of my colleagues are actual, real journalists, people who've been to journalism school. They've been writing stories, often business-related stories, about food and health and agriculture for the whole of their careers. And there are a whole range of ages from 27 up until mid-60s. We even have someone on our team who started working in the 1980s on the Boston Globe and then went on to the Wall Street Journal. And he tells us that in the olden days, he usually had to write two, maybe three stories a week. He was expected to get to the facts, to speak to the people involved, to check that what was in the story made sense. And sometimes the story wasn't good enough to run. Now, here in the nutrition business, we noticed a change starting maybe 10 or 12 years ago. We noticed that this habit of simply reproducing press releases was becoming more common. So back in 2019, we got a member of our team who'd been to journalism school only 3 or 4 years before to go and interview some journalists. And she started by interviewing people she'd been at journalism school with, all young journalists under the age of 35. And here's what we found. The average journalist today, even in the most illustrious sounding mainstream news organization, has to post about 5 stories a day on the organization's website. Do you remember I said just now that our colleague who used to work in the 90s was doing 2 or 3 a week? The young journalists told us that means they have no time to research the stories properly. They have no time to check facts. They have no time to interview people or find out whether there's an alternative point of view or perhaps a point of view from someone who's really well informed on the subject. We found some media outlets where the journalist was expected to post 10 stories a day. And why do you think this happens? Well, it happens because the media now exists to get clicks. It depends on digital advertising, which basically comes through channels like Google, like Facebook. And the business of the media is to maximize clicks in order to maximize advertising revenue. And that's why they like provocative headlines. And it's also the case that the more stories you post and the more dramatic the headline, the more clicks you get, and the more advertising revenue your media outlet generates, and the happier senior management are. So in fairness to the young journalists who are stuck with the task of posting so many stories every day, the only way they can deliver the volume of stories their employers expect them to deliver is by reproducing press releases. So just to recap, mainstream media is not a credible source of information about food, nutrition, and health. It is not what it was when journalists would find out what the facts were, interview people, and decide whether or not a story was even worth bothering with. And even in the olden days, they weren't always that good at it. But we've gone from being possibly average to being really terrible now. But what disturbs me is when I look at some other areas in which I have modest expertise, and I see that they're not a credible source of information either. And now I know that perhaps they too, in these other areas, are also just reproducing someone else's press statement. In fact, I think it's fair to say that we should think about the mainstream media as a source of misinformation. And whenever you hear some politician or some superannuated politician talking about how we all need to deal with misinformation on social media and stamp down hard on it, I think to myself, well, if they mean that, that means we're also going to have to close down the New York Times, the BBC, and heaven knows who else, supposedly mainstream media sources, because as far as we can see in our field, much of what they produce is, yeah, I guess, misinformation. So how do we get around that? Well, we're fortunate. It's our job to look for the correct information. But for everyone else, one of the ways you can get around the mainstream media's unreliability in giving you an accurate picture is to go to places, well, like Twitter or X, as it's now called. There you can see actual researchers, cardiologists, professors, nutrition scientists, credible people posting about their own research and commenting on and discussing other research that they've read. So that's where we go now for leads and information. It's where we go to try and find the people who might have something intelligent to say about a newly published scientific study. And it's great to see what a professor of nutrition science is actually saying without any intermediation by a university press office or a journalist who doesn't know what they're doing. So now let's turn very briefly to the question of the study itself. Now, what the researchers at Harvard did was they went to look at the data in something called the Nurses Health Study, and there was a further study called Nurses Health Study Number 2, and another one after that. And this was health data collected from 216,695 participants over 36 years in the United States. And as you've probably already guessed, they're nurses. So when it comes to gathering the data about what the nurses ate, what their diet was over the 36 years, the studies used what are called food frequency questionnaires. And this is a questionnaire in which people are asked detailed questions about what they eat and how often, whether it's daily, weekly, even several times a day. So you have a, if you like, a long, long list of all the possible foodstuffs someone can consume. And then next to that, you have a set of vertical columns where the person marks how many times they consumed it. Now, the interesting thing is these particular questionnaires on which the Harvard study were based were only completed every 2 to 6 years. Now, some of you will already see the problem. First of all, food frequency questionnaires themselves. They used to be used a lot in the past to gather information about what people eat. Well, that was fine 40 years ago, perhaps. But unfortunately, there is a problem with a questionnaire. When you ask someone, what did you eat this morning, or yesterday, or possibly last week? Well, you're going to get a reasonable degree of accuracy. But when you ask them what they ate last month, or in the case of one of the questionnaires I looked at from this study, last year, or worse still, 2 years ago, you're going to get less and less accurate answers. There's another problem when people are filling in questionnaires. If they know that this is going to be reviewed by someone who's a scientist in the field of nutrition, there's a tendency for people to fill them in the way that makes them feel good about themselves. This is not a criticism. We're all human. We're all fallible. It's the sort of thing that humans do. So people sometimes don't mention that extra bag of potato chips or those chocolate-coated cookies they had because it might make them look like they're not as healthy as possibly they'd like to be. Now, in relation to this Harvard study, I've actually got in front of me a part of one of the questionnaires that was used as the basis for the study. So imagine you're filling in this complex thing which lists every possible type of food and asks you all the different ways that you might have consumed it weekly, monthly, daily, 5 times a day, or whatever. You've been working hard. You're being asked about what you ate a year ago. Yeah, that's right. That's what it says on the questionnaire. And I can see that what one person's done is they've simply gone to the column that says once per week, and they've checked once per week for every single food item. Clearly, that bears no relationship to how they actually are. So you have something, the food frequency questionnaire, which is an extremely poor tool for gathering information, completed by people who are going to struggle to recall the information that's required. Food frequency questionnaires are absolutely not a credible source of information. As I said before, it might have been usable 40 years ago when you're collecting background information for studies. But if anyone in science is using them today, it really suggests that their understanding about how to collect data and about how humans answer questions is a lot more slender than it should be. Food frequency questionnaires are an excellent example of garbage in, garbage out. The whole Harvard study saying that people would get diabetes from eating meat is premised on incredibly primitive, out-of-date, and untrustworthy data collection. And that's not to mention the fact that actually, scientifically, consuming animal protein doesn't give you a glucose spike. You have to have some sort of starch or carbohydrate in a food to give you a glucose spike. And that's not me saying that. That's the literature. And that's exactly what one of my colleagues said when she read the study. Oh, and by the way, in this study, I'm not really sure that they defined what meat is, whether they meant a hot dog, which has got all sorts of junk stuffed in there, or whether it's a piece of lean meat. And the study itself can't really differentiate between how I have my piece of meat, whether I have it in a burger bun with a milkshake, with or without fries, or with rice, or whatever else is in my diet. There's a huge amount of confounding information about people's food consumption. And while there are people in the world of nutritional epidemiology, as this particular branch is called, who argue you can do statistical adjustments, that is also statistical nonsense, because there are so many confounding factors that to say you can adjust for them is simply not credible. And why would you bother to adjust for confounding factors when the underlying data is so poorly collected and unreliable in the first place? So to summarize, it increasingly looks as if the mainstream media plays no useful or credible part in disseminating information about food and health. If you trust what you read in the media about science and food and nutrition and health, please think again. Thank you all very much for listening. I hope you found this interesting and even enjoyable. If you'd like more information, please go to our website, www.new-nutrition.com. You can also find me under Twitter, under my very complicated name, Julian Melantin, and you'll find lots of interesting and I hope provocative opinions on our website. Have a good day.